Hey, what's going on? Welcome to the Mile High Five podcast. I'm Doug Cunnington, and I have a special guest today, Jillian Johnsrud. How are you doing today?
Good. I love how you paused just a little bit, like, do I actually know how to say her last name? There was just that moment of, I think I know it.
And I prepared a little bit for this one, which is rare. So I went back, I listened to some other interviews. I listened to you say your name. I often double check right before I say it, but then I totally forgot. But yeah, I totally paused and I was like, perfect. I think I can do it. Yeah.
It was perfect. Nailed it.
Today, we're going to talk about basically getting ready to retire and kind of practicing a little bit and maybe even guaranteeing that you're going to be a happy retiree. And it's a big claim, but I think you and I have, number one, we have some experience, but we've also observed and talked to many people that have retired. So we're going to dig into a few things here. And for the people that don't know you, Jillian, who are you? What do you spend your time on these days?
Who am I? Great philosophical question. So on the maybe the retirement financial side, I became financially independent when I was 32. I am now 42. So 9 years ago, or maybe 10 years ago, I left my job. My spouse at the time left his job. And so I've had almost a decade in this kind of no man's land of early retirement. But throughout the process, you know, I'd also taken like a dozen mini retirements. And yeah, now what do I do? I do a lot of gardening. I dance a lot of tango. I host cocktail parties. Sometimes I write a little bit, do a little bit of group coaching. That's like 5 or 10 hours a week, maybe. I would say if you looked at my schedule, it probably looks like gardener is my mostly full-time job, and then everything else is kind of a hobby.
Very nice. Okay. And we'll talk a little bit about, because we're kind of like both semi-retired, and it sounds like maybe we have like a similar amount of work that we like to do. And at this point, our timelines actually line up a little bit. Not the financial independence piece, although people define that a little bit different. But I got laid off and became self-employed about 10 years ago. And it kind of, I mean, things change when you're self-employed, especially my bad attitude working for other people. That impacted me. And then when I started working for myself, I was like, this is much better. Like I could work harder or not very much. And yeah, it worked out well for me. Just curious, were you a good employee when you had jobs and you worked for other folks?
I think so. I was a little obsessive. Like I have always been a person that like, I love learning new things. I love challenges. Like I love excelling. I love making things better. And so I was a good employee on that side in that, like, I'm going to jump in and I'm going to do the thing and just, I'm kind of like in it to win it. And I was a bad employee in that I could usually get through that learning curve in like 6 months or 12 months. And then I'm like, well, that was fun. Wait, now you just want me to keep doing this thing like that? That sounds really boring. So I ended up switching jobs a lot just because like the learning curve at the beginning was fun. And then I was like, oh, and then I just have to keep doing this. So, well, that's less interesting.
Okay. So you would switch jobs like maybe every couple of years or something like that?
Yeah, I also, my spouse at the time was also in the military, so we moved around a little bit. So that also kind of helped because there was like a natural reason to switch. But I would say I probably, like 1 to 2 years was probably my max, which is kind of amazing in that I've done essentially like content creation. Like I've been a writer now for 10 years and I'm like, I can't believe I've stuck around for this. Like this is incredible. I've never stuck with anything this long professionally.
Very interesting. Okay, cool. So we'll get into the topic. One or two more questions. So you mentioned how many hours you work. Can you talk about some of those pieces and then we talked about like how many hours per week, but like how much per year do you work? And I'll mention for myself, probably 5 years ago, maybe a little bit more, I thought, hey, I want to take about a month off like per year. And then I, you know, it was a little bit flexible. Sometimes I would spread that out. And then it was like, I should take like a month off like twice a year. So I like tested that out, which, you know, it's kind of the mini retirement idea slash, you know, if you're self-employed, it's just, you could, depending on what you're doing, you can kind of take a break. And I also was doing content creation. So as long as I set up systems and I had my courses running and other things, it was okay to let it run on its own. And my background helped me set up systems and frameworks and like make things work without me being there the whole time. So what does your year look like, or maybe a quarter, however you want to describe it?
Yeah, I don't want to say that I'm the laziest content creator, because that sounds pejorative and negative. I would say I'm perhaps the most lifestyle focused of content creators, in that like I started this, I was already financially independent. I started this as a hobby. And for better or worse, I can't break out of hobby mindset. Like, so I do take sometimes a month off, sometimes 6 months off. And I don't batch stuff ahead of time. I don't utilize things. People who get my email newsletter, there's like this idea in the content creation world, like you should publish like same day every week. You should have this consistent schedule. My email newsletter is quite literally, I've been having this thought that is interesting to me. Maybe I'll share it with some people. And maybe that's once a month. Maybe it's twice a month. Maybe it's been a couple months. But because people have been on my email list for a really long time, have adapted to this, that you have no idea. It's just a surprise. It's a surprise for both of us. I'm surprised. You're surprised. And they're like, it's always delightful. Like, oh, look, an email from Jillian just happened to show up in my inbox. I wasn't expecting it. I'm like, yeah, I wasn't expecting to write it either. So we're in the same boat. But I've really approached it in that I was doing this as a value add to my life, because I wanted, like, I always wanted to be a writer. I wanted to be a creative person. I wanted to do something that felt meaningful and helpful. And so I do that as much as it works for me. And sometimes that's zero. And other times, like if I'm in the middle of writing a book, like I'll go on a cruise for a week and I'll write 5 or 6 hours a day, and that's lovely, but it's pretty low key. I wish I could gear it up. Sometimes I'm like, oh, I should be like studious and diligent. And then I'm like, or I could like go for a walk with a friend and go grab coffee. And I usually do that instead.
That's better. I didn't realize we had a lot in common with our in air quotes laziness, because like we're neither of us are lazy. Like we do stuff, but it's just like from the outside, if someone was watching us, they may think it looks lazy. And laziness needs a rebrand. And I'm working on a book. I think I told you, Carl and I were working on it. It's anti-productivity and laziness. We'll finish it sometime. You know, it's hard to get around. We're living the lifestyle of laziness, but I like the way that you let the hobby sort of serve you. It's like it is what you want it to be. The one thing that I've done, to your point, only with the podcast, always published on the schedule that I set aside ahead of time. And haven't missed a week. Sometimes I will, you know, we dip back into the archive and republish an episode. So I cheat like that, but there's enough episodes where like I don't feel too bad about it. But at some point, especially for my other podcast, Not Mile High Fi, I look at it and I think, I could just quit. Like I'm really good at sunk costs now. And I'm like, I could just stop and then it would be fine. There's no big deal. So, okay. Let's get into the meat of this, and I'll let you answer this. So how can people test what retiring might look like?
Well, I'll start by saying, I think we should test it out before you jump in. I see, especially in the Phi movement, I see kind of the opposite approach often. And I hear people struggling with that opposite approach of like, if I just really focus, if I really push hard, I'm like 75% of the way there. If I push hard for like 4 more years, then I'm going to be totally fine. And I never have to think about work and I never have to think about money. And then I can like fully relax and that won't, like that'll be less stressful. But what I see practically is it's kind of like driving a car like 70 miles an hour down the interstate and then just popping that thing in reverse. Like it's a little bit hard of a transition. And so I think the more you practice it somehow, like I encourage people to do that through many retirements, but however you practice like what this life is going to look like, it's, choose another metaphor. Like, it's like, if you're like, I really want to run a marathon, like, that's it. That's what I want to do. And I'm like, hey, so that's cool. Have you done like a 5K or something? Nope. No, I'm not going to do anything. I'm not going to train. I think I'm just going to like work really hard. And then one day I'm going to run a marathon. And you're like, cool. Like, I think mile 17, like, you might be puking on the side of the road. They might be carrying you off because you have like muscle cramps in your legs. But like, if that's how you want to do it, like, sure. Let's see how that goes.
And I think, you know, you and I have seen enough examples and actually my old co-host, Carl, you know, he has explained it many times where he was, I mean, his blog is 1500days.com, right? I mean, he was like trying mm-hmm. to retire as soon as possible. And he shared many times over the last couple of years, just that probably wasn't the right approach. And you could take the pioneer's approach and coast and do slow fi and like test things and take a different approach that's not really all about speed. So agree with all that stuff. Mini retirement, a sabbatical is a great way to test things out. And a big focus of our discussion is some of the issues that might pop up. And to be a little bit redundant, like you mentioned, people are going 70 miles an hour, they're working really hard. They're probably in some of their like most productive years, their earnings mm-hmm. are higher. You know, we're thinking they're probably in their 30s or 40s or maybe even early 50s. And then they're very busy. They probably have a family, there's other stuff going on. And then all of a sudden they have total freedom and all the time in the world. And it could drive a person crazy because all of a sudden you can't blame it on your job. You can't blame it mm-hmm. on not having enough money. You can't blame it on all these other pieces that were creating this busyness, and people might freak out. Have you seen any, maybe people that you coach that ran mm-hmm. into that? So they were like, they finally achieved what they were going for and it wasn't what they thought it was going to be and they freaked out.
Yeah, it's not what they think it will be in like a dozen different ways. Like there's a lot of ways this goes off the rail. And it's always funny when people come to me about mini retirements because they're like, you know, I'm really nervous about, I have all these concerns. I have concerns about finding another job. I have concerns about the budget. I have concerns about like people will think about it. And I'm like, those are great concerns. That's not actually how it goes wrong. Like it will go wrong. But that's not how it goes wrong. It goes wrong in the ways that are a little bit trickier to problem solve for. And it goes wrong in ways that people feel are really unique to them, even though, you know, when I wrote Retire Often, I used this metaphor of like when Lewis and Clark were sent to go all the way to the West Coast and explore this land. And everyone on the East Coast was like, this is uncharted territory. We have no idea what to expect. Like we're the first ones to like go through these places and map these lands. And it's like, yeah, I know you feel that way. And actually, a whole bunch of people have actually lived here. Like a bunch of people are really familiar with this territory because they've been living here for like hundreds and thousands of years. So it's possible to do something that feels super unique and uncharted, but there's also other people who've perhaps experienced it. And if you ask them, If you find like a Sacagawea and be like, hey, could you kind of show us the ropes? It makes it a little bit less daunting. And so, yeah, a lot of the things you mentioned, there's a whole bunch of ways it goes off the rails. And as we were talking about kind of being high performers, I do notice oftentimes that people, there's a benefit, there's a psychological benefit of accomplishing things, of feeling productive, of feeling useful, of feeling important. And people get a lot of that from their job. And they don't necessarily know how to organize their time and their life in a way that provides that same psychological benefit. And they think, well, I just won't need that benefit. I won't need to be a productive person. I won't need to be a useful person. Well, you might. You might still need that. But the question is, do you know how to give that to yourself? And do you know how to organize your time in a way? Oh my gosh. And this happens a lot. In a way that doesn't drive other people crazy. So like I mentioned, I'm a betterer. I love to make things better. It's an energy I have. And I used to funnel that into my work, and I loved making things better. And then I came home and I was with my family. And my spouse at the time was like, okay, Jillian, so like this betterer energy, it's like the sunshine. It is so lovely and warm, and it makes everything grow. And if you condense it down just to our family, it's like a laser beam that will burn us. Like, we need to spread this out. It's a good thing, but we need to spread it out a little bit. And I've seen people come home and like, they take their organization and they take their productivity and they take their, we're going to get stuff done. And they put that on their spouse and they put that on their kids and they bring that to the PTA and they bring that to the book club. And everyone's like, yeah, no, that's a hard pass. We have 0% interest in what you're trying to bring to this.
Oh man, we're dealing with some HOA stuff around here. And it's like, take that energy to the HOA. It's <Yeah. laughs> everybody fucking hates it anyway. Like they asked me to be the treasurer. And I was like, I respectfully declined. No way. I am not doing that. Are you crazy? I wouldn't even be able to vote. I just have to like keep the book. And I was like, yeah, no, I'm not going to do that. Do you have an HOA where you're at? Probably not, right?
We do, but it's Montana. It's so chill. It's so chill.
When I lived in Bozeman, yeah, ours was, it was very chill. I think it was only like $40 a quarter. This was, you know, 8 years ago. So it's probably like $400 a quarter now, like the way Bozeman has changed. But yeah, here it's like more expensive, and I'll tell you about it some other time. Nobody wants me to hear, or no one wants to hear me complain about the HOA. Okay. So back on topic here, people will run into issues. It's often not the ones they think, but the thing is, and I've taken a few sort of mini retirements, although I never thought of it that way. It was more like, I didn't want to work and I wanted to take a break and do other fun stuff instead. And it lets you practice like what you're going to do and what it's going to look like, but it's not completely unlimited. And there's probably some finite stretch of time. Like for me, often it was like a month or 6 weeks or something like that. So it's enough time where you can chill out and get out of your normal routine. Maybe you travel, maybe you do a thing, but it gave me a chance to like break away from maybe like my kind of my identity and my normal routine. And then you really get a chance to test things out. And this could be, you know, we'll get into some of the details, but I mean, part of it is like being productive, like you said, and creating something and feeling useful. And maybe it's around learning how your expenses might change and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But if you do this gradually, then you get a little better at it each time. Mm-hmm. And actually, in over years, you get very good at it. And by the time, you know, at this point, I'm 45. I haven't been working a ton for the last 5 years. And I have no issue telling people, yeah, like I don't do that much. And I don't really care what they think, or if they're like, why doesn't this guy work He's just walking around the neighborhood all the time, going to the gym and stuff. And it's not like I have no issue with it. And that could be, perhaps that's actually a personality flaw that I have, but I've turned it around. So now it's kind of a positive thing where I'm like, it's okay if people think that I don't work because I really don't do too much. So one area, especially like the high performers, like we're probably around pretty often, and people that try to retire early, they're tied to their professional identity. And it could be, I mean, people have invested a lot of time in their education, maybe just their overall experience. Their network is all built around, let's say it's a doctor or a lawyer. So it's like, it's their identity in some way. And then they're like, all right, great, I'm going to retire. Now, some people, they're able to break away, but some people are so tied to it, it really makes it difficult. So not really a question here, but can you elaborate? Do you have observations on this with people that have a very strong professional identity, especially if they're successful?
Yeah, I think sometimes we underestimate or we don't acknowledge how much social credibility that our profession can give us. Because when you meet someone and that's the first thing they ask, they, for better or worse, are kind of gauging, is this a person that's worth my time? Is this a person valuable enough for me to interact with? And they might say no. They might, you know, I heard another thing about how difficult it is for people who were extremely attractive in their 20s and 30s to lose that, because then all of a sudden they realize like they don't have this social currency anymore in maybe their 50s and 60s that they once had. And profession can be a social currency, and it can be tough to let that go and have people not be impressed, like not care, not think that you as a human have value. You have to be really self-assured of what is my value as a human being, like what do I appreciate about myself, and not be thrown off by other people's confusion. And it's something like a metaphor I use sometimes is like if you inherited a ring, like a family heirloom, and let's say it was like a 3-carat sapphire, and someone comes up and is like, oh, hey, that's cool. Is that like 2 carats? And you're like, no, it's 3. Or they're like, oh, is that like 4 carats? And you're like, no, it's 3. They're like, oh, is that a ruby? You're like, no, it's a sapphire. Like, you know what it is. No one else does. Like, everyone else is slightly confused or incorrect, but you just have to be cool being like, I know what it is, just because you don't know what it is. Like, even for me, it was funny. I've always driven kind of like beater cars, and that was really hard when I was broke, because people would see it and they would know that I was broke. And that was a painful thing, to be broke and to have other people know that I'm broke. And then as I got more and more money, it became less painful, because while they might think I'm broke, I know I'm not broke. But I did have a moment like a week or two ago where my van, oh, it's in such bad shape. Like it's even past the point where I'm like, this is acceptable. Like this is, we're right on embarrassing. And like, there's a belt that squeaks and I can't get it to stop squeaking. And it's just like a whole thing. And, you know, and now like, you know, my ex and I are separated. I'm a single mom, and like, and I'm driving this beater van. And like someone, I was meeting someone and they saw my vehicle, and I just thought, oh, like I look like such a stereotype. Like this, like I know I'm not, but they 100% think that I'm like a broke single mom with a beater van. And I'm like, okay. No, it's okay. I know the actual numbers behind this. Maybe it's, I need to buy a new van though.
Yeah. What year is it?
I think it's like 20 years old.
Okay.
We bought it like 10 or 12 years ago, and I think it was like a decade old then, which was fine. But I have 5 kids, and man, we have rode this thing hard and put it away wet. Like it has not been treated kindly. It has been used aggressively.
Yeah. I think I'm with you. Although I didn't feel too bad about my truck, but I was going to say, I recently sold my truck and it was 20 years old. Kind of it was just above like a work level F-150. And the outside was like in okay-ish shape, but it had like, it's like manual windows and manual locks. So it's like truly a work truck. And it was a little sad selling it, but at the same, I'm like without a car right now. So my wife and I are just sharing one, but I don't drive that much. But yeah, I hear you on like having the old car and people are like, oh, this guy probably, I mean, what a loser. He's driving like a 20-year-old truck. But like, to your point, I'm like, I don't care. Like, I'm like, why do people have such fancy cars around here? It's crazy. Like, but eventually I'll make it a car. I don't know.
And it's funny for me because I think I was at a point where I didn't care. And now because I'm in transition, like all of a sudden I'm noticing, oh, I care a little bit more, which can be something that happens like as you retire often or retire early. Like you're like, no, I don't care about that. And then something shifts in your life and you do. Because I very specifically remember a moment I was driving my old Honda Civic, also a beater, like popped paint, like just a rough looking little car. And I was getting, I think, snow tires put on it. And I don't know if you've ever had like this telepathic conversation with someone where nothing is said, but like the whole conversation unfolds anyways. And so the guy comes out, this young guy, this is maybe 5 or 10 years ago, and to get the keys for my vehicle. And he looks at me and telepathically he says, oh, sweetie, like, you're way too pretty to be driving such a shitty vehicle. And I absorb that, but I can't audibly respond because he only said this telepathically. So I have to like telepathically respond, it's okay, I'm actually rich. Like, we're okay. Yeah. So I think having that self-assurance and that confidence that like, there's other parts of me that are interesting and valuable to my social circle, to my friends, to my family, to new people I meet. I don't have to rely or lean so heavy on my profession. Mm-hmm.
When people ask you what you do these days, what do you say?
I say I'm a writer and I live in Montana. So that's not like a real job. So it's hard to say something that's not a real job. Yeah. And someone actually, I was listening to some music and a guy goes, wait, can you actually like make a living doing that? And I said, oh, I'm independently wealthy. And he's like, okay, that makes more sense. And I'm like, yeah. So yeah. It is weird telling people that that you do something that most people do not consider a profession for valid reasons. Like it's a weird thing to try to make money writing words.
Right. Well, I mean, you do have YouTube and a podcast, right? Because you publish on both. Mm-hmm. And it's like people now know what that is. Like 8 years ago, people would be like, oh, really? Like I think I heard of a podcast. But now if you say YouTube or podcasting, the people are like, oh, okay, that's really cool. I never met a real podcaster or whatever. An author is fine. I mean, writer and author, a little bit different because author indicates perhaps you've been published, which you have been. So that's like, is that a slight difference?
It's an easy fallback. Yeah. Because then they'll say, well, what do you write? And I said, well, I've written a book. And then we can kind of talk about that. But even then, like the economics behind this, like I cannot justify this as like a viable career.
Yeah. Okay. So a couple things before we move on. So we talked about professional identity, and I listened to an interview that you did with Paula Pant over on Afford Anything. There was a comment, and this is sort of a generic one. I've heard this from so many people, and I maybe said it myself when I had a corporate job, but people will say that they're so important to a company that they're unable to get time off because they're the only one that could do that work. And when I heard this, you did a really good job on the show answering how you talked to your coaching client or whoever it was. But when I heard it, I was just like, people are so full of themselves to think that they can't be replaced. There are super rare occasions where, like, if it's a very small company, like 5 people, like I kind of get it. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, like if you're at a big corporation, they could fucking replace you so fast. They could lay you off. Like, you are not that important. So in my old job, I always thought it was very silly. Or when people were like, yeah, become like so important that they have to have you there. And I'm like, that's the worst thing you could do because then you can't get off that project. Very specific to my company, but I don't think people are that unique and special, and they can definitely find someone else. And probably they're working on your team right now, and if you gave them the chance, they would take over. So do you have anything else to add?
Yeah, I kind of flip it in that when people are thinking like, could I ask for a month off, but like nobody can do my job? Like, okay, well, if no one can do your job, then how, because there are jobs that are hard to replace. And so I'll say, well, how long will it take them to find a new replacement? And it might take them 6 months. Like that interview process might be a long thing. And then I'm like, okay, cool. So that takes 6 months. How long will it take for that person to get up to speed? And it might take them another 6 to 12 months because some jobs are hard and they take a long time to learn how to do. And I'm like, okay, cool, cool. So they could either give you a month off, or if you leave, no one is going to competently do this job for 12 months. And I think our job in negotiating is to make you taking this time off the easiest, simplest, cheapest solution. Like that's what you have to present. Me taking a little mini retirement is the easiest, cheapest, and simple solution to this problem. And my dad always said, he was in the military, and he said the easiest way to get rid of a problem in the military is just to say no. If someone brings any question or any concern to you, you just say no. And if it makes the problem go away, then you're done. Like easiest thing. And so making sure you have enough leverage that if they could just say no, they'll just say no. And if the problem goes away, that's great. But when you have the willingness to leave a job, you're presenting two different problems. The problem of replacing you, or the problem of giving you a month or two off. And you just have to figure out how you getting the time off is the easiest, cheapest, simplest problem to solve.
Very good. That's a much more positive way than the way I say it.
You're not as important as you think.
Yeah. I mean, it's true. Yeah. I mean, Carl was an integral part of this show. He quit. And I was like, we'll have Jillian step in. I'll bring other folks on. People love it.
So, didn't miss a beat.
We miss Carl. We all miss Carl. He's doing well, quite busy. Yeah. I was like, hey, do you want to blah, blah, blah? And he's like, I'm busy. So it's probably just blowing me off. But we only covered a small portion of what I wanted to. So let's do some sort of quick hits and
rapid fire.
Yes. So we perhaps have heard of someone who has taken a sabbatical and they started sort of arguing or fighting with their partner. Why is that? Why does this come up?
Yeah, I think this is something we also saw during COVID. And I call it kind of like the messy kitchen. When my spouse and I were both working, sometimes like at night, like the kitchen would be messy and we wouldn't clean it. And then we'd think, well, we'll do it in the morning. But then it was busy getting everyone out of the house out of the morning. So we just leave it. But when you go to work, it wasn't messy at work. Like the break room was clean at work. And I didn't even think about the messy kitchen. And you can kind of avoid that issue. But if you retire early, if you take a mini retirement, if you're stuck at home with your spouse during COVID, you just have to live in the messy kitchen. Like there's no avoiding it. There's no ignoring it. And this can be, it doesn't, I always tell people, like, it's not creating the problem. It's revealing the problem. And there's a lot of, in this kind of messy kitchen, there's a lot of different problems. It might be conflict with a spouse. I had one client who, super busy entrepreneur, really wanted to spend more time with his kiddos. And then like 2 weeks into his mini retirement, we were having a call and he was like, just devastated. He's like, my six-year-old and I aren't as close as I thought we were. Like, we actually don't have a great relationship. And he was just heartbroken. And that is super sad. But I'm like, but dude, she's also six. Like, if she were 22, this is an issue. But like, this is the perfect moment. So sometimes, like, the problem is kind of also the solution. Like, the mini retirement reveals this problem, but the mini retirement also gives you an opportunity to fix this. And I don't know, people who honestly, like, they've been so busy with their jobs that they have been able to run away from their trauma. They have been able to run away from mental health issues, but it's been like outrunning an avalanche. And sometimes I see people run so fast and so hard professionally because they're outrunning an avalanche. And as soon as you stop, it might bury you, which is hard and sucky to like, yay, I finally retired early, 15 years of hard work. And now like, you feel like your life is falling apart. But the problem is the solution. Like, now you have the opportunity to actually do this work, whether it's communicating with your spouse or dealing with your own trauma or dealing with your mental health or your physical health or realizing, actually, I don't have a lot of friends outside of work. I thought I had friends, but they've all kind of moved on in the last 10 years where I was super busy with work. They all have new friends and we're not as close as I thought we were.
And I think the way my wife and I were able to start working remotely for several years, and then we did some slow travel, again, working remotely, we were able to test out like working at home. So we got like practice for COVID for like a decade, basically. And it would be like, we would rent a house, like we rented a house in Austin in like 2014. And then we stayed in Denver in like 2013 a couple times, like sometimes house sitting, sometimes renting a place. But it worked out great because it was just like, okay, we know we're going to have some additional constraints and like maybe a smaller area and we won't be in our home, so we won't have all of our stuff. And it's like, we were flexible. Also, like you said, it revealed some whatever, maybe preferences on how we like to work or not like to work. And by the time COVID came around, by the time I got laid off and was self-employed, and then we were basically just like working at home, like we knew what we needed. So by the time we like retired, my wife retired a year ago and I stopped working, it's like we tested this out. We're really good spending a shitload of time together, road tripping, like just being together, like 22 hours a day or something like that. So it works really well. Now, we're talking about, we can't solve people's problems, right? So if you're at home and you're running into issues, like go to a couples therapist or whatever you have to do. We can't solve all your problems, but it may reveal some issues that you didn't know were there. So yeah, go ahead.
And I think it's just like I talked about, kind of the Lewis and Clark expedition, like understanding this isn't a unique problem to you. And it doesn't mean that you're doing something wrong. And it doesn't mean that you made a bad choice. I think having that mindset of like, oh, now I see what I can improve. Now I can see what I can fix, because that it's something I work with people a lot in like the group coaching for mini retirements, because how we think about what's happening makes a huge difference in our experience. And my goal is like, let's reduce the amount of unnecessary emotional suffering that we're going to have. Like, if we don't have to emotionally suffer about this. And so just kind of developing a more helpful perspective. I see this too when people are really burned out. They,
you know, they have this big list of things they want to do during early retirement or their mini retirement, and they are so excited about all of these things, but their body's so burned out that they get home and their body's like, oh, thank God, now we get to rest. And they start napping and they start sleeping more, and their body like reduces their motivation and their energy to give it access to that deep rest. But the story people tell themselves about what this means is, look, I'm lazy. I can't even be productive outside of a job. I can't even accomplish anything. Why the heck did I leave work? I was earning money and now I'm not earning money and I'm spending all this money and I'm not even an organized, disciplined person apparently. My work was doing all of that. And now I'm fighting with my spouse. And now I'm dealing with all of these issues. Like, why did I give up all that money just to like do this? I should just go back to work. And I'm sure you know a lot of early retirees 6 months in, all of a sudden you hear, actually the perfect job came along. Oh my gosh, this is like a once in a lifetime opportunity. I think I'm just going to go back for like a year or two, and then I'm really going to have enough money. Like I'll definitely never have to worry about money. And I'm like, you just couldn't deal with the discomfort of this change. And so you went back to the thing that was easy, where instead, if like you're tired and you're not motivated and you're not getting anything done, I tell people, just say to yourself, man, it's a good thing I'm on a mini retirement and I can just take a nap. Like, isn't that lovely? I'm tired and I just get to take a nap. Like, you don't have to create this whole story about how you're an awful human being because you can't get through your to-do list.
You basically described my dream life and literally what I do most of the time. I'm just like, man, I used to get so much stuff done. I still have the fucking notebook with lists and stuff. I do like two things a day. It's ridiculous. And except for you mentioned like fighting with your spouse, we get along pretty well. And then the going back to a job, I'm just like, at this point, I don't think I could do it. I don't think someone would hire me. Although funny thing, I would interview much better now than I used to. Number one, because I don't give a shit. And then number two, because I've been doing these kind of podcast and interviews and a little bit of storytelling, like I could probably do an interview much better. And like, they'd be like, oh yeah, this guy, he seems like I want to work with him. So weirdly, now that I would never take a job. Okay. So I went off topic a little bit, but yeah, people, laziness is okay. It's just, we were trained and people told us like, laziness is bad. It just needs a little bit of a rebrand where it's like, if you need rest, take the rest. I didn't sleep that well last night. Super high chance I'm going to work out and take a nap when I get back. Like, it's a great way to, you know, make up the sleep. Usually if I sleep well, I don't have to take a nap, and that's a whole other story. But like I said, we only got through maybe like 25% of what I wanted to. So, we are coming up towards the end of time for us today, but Jillian, you have a book out. Can you tell us a little bit about it, who it's for, and a few other details?
Yeah, it's called Retire Often. You can find it anywhere, everywhere. And it's about how to leverage these mini retirements, either to prepare you for retiring early. I mean, especially your audience, like... The thing that I find so slightly tragic about people who retire early and then go back to work 6 months later is they're the same people that told me, I only got 5 years left. If I just push really hard, I can get all the way there and then I never have to go back. I never have to worry about it. And I'm like, if you just would have taken a couple little breaks and practiced this, because sometimes I have a slightly dark sense of humor. One of the things I encourage people is they'll have like this huge list. I have so many things I want to do, so many things I want to accomplish, all these hobbies. I would never be bored. I'm going to be so fulfilled. And then, but they don't actually have time to pursue any of those because they're working so much. So they retire and then they realize, oh, actually, I don't like this as much as I thought I did. Like, I mean, I like learning Chinese, but not really. Or like, I like hiking, but like not every day. I kind of actually just like doing it once a week. Yeah. And I'm like, the great thing about mini retirements is you can spread out that disappointment. Be just a little bit disappointed every time and cross that shit off the list and then think of new stuff you want to put on the list that you'll try next time. And that next time you'll be like, oh, actually, I don't like playing pool with my friends. Really thought I wanted to do that. Cross that off the list and like go back to work and reimagine some new things you want to put on the list so that by the time you do retire early, you've got a list that's mostly accurate. Like it's not entirely going to be accurate, but like you've test drove this thing a little bit. So it's about how to, I call it retire often because like you said, every time you do it, you get better at it. You figure more stuff out. You go through the learning curve, like do the 5K, do the 10K, do the half marathon before you have a retirement stretching out for the next 40 or 50 years of your life, which, yeah, it's a little daunting. It's a little daunting if you've never tried it before. Mm-hmm.
Very good. It's a great book. I pre-ordered it months ago. We'll put a link so people can get it. And Jillian, where should people find you out there? Where do you want them to go?
Yeah, retireoften.com. I've got a podcast where I like tell other people get to share their mini retirement stories. So if you're like, oh, it would never work for me. Well, there's someone on there that is just like you and it worked for them. And I've got some free worksheets on there. And on social media, I'm at Jillian Johnsrud. So if you want to connect with me that way.
All right.
Or my newsletter, if you want to randomly receive letters that you never know what they're going to be about or when they're going to show up. It's kind of like the grab bag surprise. Like used to have at the front of the store, like $3. And you get a little brown paper bag with randomness in it.
Whatever's in there. Well, it's like the, it's like a slot machine. It's like, you don't know what you're going to get. Yeah. You don't know when you're going to get it. So it keeps us coming back for more. So we will we'll link up to all the places. Like I said, check out the book. It's awesome. And Jillian, thanks a lot. It's always fun to catch up.
So good chatting.
Thanks for listening to the show. That was the Mile High Five podcast, and I'm Doug Cunnington. If you dig the show, please do three things for us. Number one, tell a friend, a family member, an enemy about the show. We really don't care who you tell. Maybe forward them a specific show that you know that they will like. It's the single most helpful thing that you can do to spread the word. It's like giving us a virtual high five, and actually we don't give high fives in person, so the virtual kind's pretty good. And more importantly, your friend or family member or even your enemy will appreciate the fact that you were thinking of them. Number two, make sure you're following or subscribed on your podcast app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, YouTube, whatever you're using, and that way you won't miss a show. And number three, please leave us a rating and review. We read them on the show occasionally, and you might hear yours out there on an upcoming episode. Quick disclaimer, this show is not financial or legal advice. I'd actually be surprised if it sounded like it. It's really just for entertainment, and that's at least what we're hoping for. But seriously, get advice from professionals. So we'll catch y'all next week. So today you're starting a walking challenge and there's some other components too. Can you tell me a little bit about it?
Yeah, a group of friends and I are doing it. We have to walk an hour a day, which like normally easy peasy, but I'm coming out of winter. I'm not in Montana. There's not a lot of winter walking. So I'm trying to kind of ease back into it. Like, and I don't know if you have noticed this. After 40, my mind sometimes is stronger than my body. Like my will to do something versus like overuse injuries is like a really tricky balance that I didn't experience as much in my 20s. So I am trying to be mindful because I also dance tango. So like there's a lot of, you know, I do probably 6-7 hours of tango dancing a week. Plus now I'm going to add in an hour of walking a day.
Yeah, that's a lot of time on your feet. I have unfortunately noticed that. And I like to exercise and get outside and be very active. And basically my goal is no injuries. So like for a little while, I was like trying to hit some goals, some weightlifting goals. And then it was like, okay, I hurt my back. And now it's like 6 weeks of like trying to like not hurt myself again and heal up. So now I'm just like, don't get hurt. Make sure you can work out the next day or next week or dance or whatever you have to do. So very cool. What is the other component? You mentioned watching calories or at least monitoring. So what's that about?
Yes. So I'm doing meal prep. They have like a calorie target, which so I've counted calories a lot and done kind of a lot of meal planning and prepping, but I normally, so I'm almost 6 foot. So I normally kind of like try to hit in like that 1700-1800 calorie range, like, cause I'm also fairly active. This one, they're like, we think for you 1227. That sounds great. I know, I'm a little bit terrified, which means like to get enough protein, I cannot wing this. Like I massively need to put a lot of thought and intention to get this correct, because there's not a lot of wiggle room there.
Just wanted to make sure I heard that. 12, what did you say?
1227. 1227 calories. Yeah. I know.
In our show notes, I mentioned that I cuss some. Is that cool with you if I cuss here?
Yeah.
That's fucking wrong. Like that is insane. Like that is not right. I don't know what calculator they use. Cause you're in pretty good shape too. So you have some muscle. You need way more calories than that. You're gonna completely starve yourself. As I've started to, because I started counting calories and changed some stuff up and blah, blah, blah. Like I needed quite a few calories. I'm pretty active, especially in the summer. And you could obviously tell how much muscle I have. I'm just kidding. But like you need, that was a much bigger laugh than it should have been. But you need to, I would revisit that, because like it depends on how much you were eating before. But like if you're increasing your activity and you're cutting your calories so much, you're going to feel totally fatigued and you're going to be so tired. You'll feel awful.
I also work out with a personal trainer every week, and she does like nutrition coaching. And so she's like, so are you going to do this? Like, are you going to follow this plan? Like, this is not what we have done. And I was like, you know what? So I'm going to try to follow the plan, but I'm old enough now to know that like, if something's not working, there again, like my mind can't be stronger than my body. If my body is saying, hey, this isn't working for us, like you're lightheaded, you're dizzy, you feel like you have no energy, like there's no glycogen in your muscles, we can't do anything, then my mind has to relent and be like, okay, yeah, let's eat a couple apples. Like let's figure this out.
Yeah. Interesting. All right. I'll check in with you in like a week or two to find out like where you ended up. It's like maybe you could do like 1200 calories, but then you add on like a couple steaks or something like that. So you get, just don't count those. Just like 1 pound of like pure protein and some fat in there and just ignore it. You'll feel great. Probably.